The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Donald Trump has been steamrolling through his agenda just 2 weeks since he took over. He has imposed and paused tariffs on Mexico and China, threatened them on Europe and imposed them on China. And as you heard in the news headlines, China has responded. He's also begun what is called a cost-cutting initiative of government departments led by Elon Musk. So as all of this is happening, where are the opposition, the Democrats, and is Trump being kept in check by them? Well, to talk about this, we're joined by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, good morning. As Trump continues to push through the agenda, Larry, where are the Democrats?
Good morning. Yeah, it's an interesting question, Pat. Democrats are getting some pushback, I suppose, both in the media and from some activists at state level. In particular, Democrats in the Senate are getting it in the neck for not being robust enough in terms of how they have dealt with nominees and or policies. Indeed, the governor of my own state, Mara Haley, evidently made a pretty impassioned plea to Democrats on Capitol Hill that they need to start standing up to the president and fighting his agenda at every turn. Now, the response of Democrats in the Senate has been that, look, they had a very poor election. They are not in a position to stop Donald Trump's executive orders. There's something else at play here, too, Pat, to be frank, and that is that in some battleground states, Democratic senators have taken the temperature of their electorate. They are wary of getting involved in battles that they potentially cannot win and ultimately could do them some damage at the ballot box. So this is irritating progressives. Now, at the same time, Democratic leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, has announced a comprehensive plan to push back on Donald Trump with his legislative agenda, where they do have some power. Remember, the Republican majority in the House is very, very slim. So I suspect there will be a good bit of pushback there. But all in all, I think Democrats are in a difficult spot. I think that last time around when Trump was president, they probably made some mistakes. They jumped at everything he said or did and got distracted. I think they're determined not to make that same mistake again. But in the process of being cautious, they're irking some on the progressive wing of the party.
It's more than being cautious, Larry, isn't it? I mean, you have a situation where an unelected man, Elon Musk, decides to shut down U.S. aid. And then he has access to, if you like, all the billing details, invoicing details and payment details of the U.S. government, including the payments made to his own competitors. I mean, this is crazy stuff. And the Democrats should be jumping up and down about it instead of, it appears, standing idly by.
Well, there has been some pushback on that from Democrats. And indeed, you know, some of the things, not just what you've alluded to, but some of the things that Trump is trying to do by executive orders, there will be Democratic affiliated lawyers who will be filing lawsuits to try to put a stop to this. I agree. Much of what we're seeing in Washington, D.C. Is unprecedented. It is deeply disturbing that someone like Elon Musk is exercising power and influence at the very, very highest level. But at the end of the day, Pat, we did have an election. Donald Trump won the election, and that is the sad reality. And I think to some extent, Democrats, you know, again, there's an element of wait and see. Is Trump going to spin himself out? Is this going to prove so deeply unpopular with the American people that they're going to let him go at this for a while and say, wait a second, this is having catastrophic consequences, and Democrats will win votes and win support back?
It seems extraordinary that the Democrats aren't calling it. One or two are, that this is, if you like, a rolling dictatorship. It's unfolding before their eyes, and yet they won't call it that.
Pat, that's a strict political calculation, in my view. They tried rhetoric like that. They tried language like that in the past. It failed spectacularly. Don't forget that when you say that Trump is a dictator, when you say that he is a fascist, when you say that he is an authoritarian, that can rebound against you. And I'll tell you why.
Oh, dear. Poor little Democrats. This might rebound. Sometimes there are principles at stake, Larry. These political calculations that these self-interested Democrats have, I mean, really, they're not seeing it like it is. They cannot see the wood for the trees. What's the point in winning your next primary and getting your seat back if you get your seat back in a dictatorship?
Well, Pat, I think that a lot of that language is, number one, overblown. And let me tell you why Democrats are betwixt and between. And I agree. It is disturbing that they're not pushing back harder on some of this. But when you start to use some of that rhetoric, the people who voted for Donald Trump internalize that. They say, okay, that makes us fascist. That makes us authoritarians. Wait a sec, we don't believe that. And one of the messages they sent to Democrats and to others who tried to convey that message to them was, in the words of Joe Manchin's ex-chief of staff, go to hell. And Democrats are very wary of alienating that big sway of the population, the people who they are going to need if they're going to win the midterm elections next time around. So the labels, yes, maybe there's some truth in them. Yes, what's going on right now is disturbing. Yes, Democrats could fight back better. But at the same time, it's not quite as simple. And all of the rhetoric and everything else might sound good. It's standing up for principles, standing up for morality, all of that. It might sound good. But unfortunately, that's not the way politics ultimately works.
I can think of situations where they thought they were voting for something and they got something else. And we can go back to the 1930s in Germany, where the people elected Adolf Hitler in. They didn't expect what they got.
Pat, I would suggest to you that the majority of American people, the people, again, the people who feel that way, the people who see the specter of that as a possibility, which I myself happen to think is overwrought, but the people for whom that message is going to play well, the people who are going to say, wow, Democrats need to push back, they're going to vote Democrat anyway. Politics is a numbers game. And to win the votes, and this is why Democrats are, and again, I understand the criticism. I understand why people are upset. I understand all of that. But Democrats are not in an easy position. Make no mistake, Trump won and he won comprehensively. They lost control of the Senate. 53-47 is a pretty good majority for the Republican Party. They need to operate against that backdrop and pick their battles effectively to win them. And again, all of the rhetoric that you're putting back to me, it all sounds great, but that's not how democracy works, I'm afraid.
Okay, so they can, you know, that old saying about they came for the trade unionist, I wasn't a trade unionist, so I did nothing. They came for the socialist, I wasn't a socialist, so I did nothing. They came for the Jews, I wasn't a Jew, so I did nothing. Then they came for me, and there was no one to defend me.
Pat, I think that, again, I think that that's quite overwrought to be making that comparison. I think that Democrats are pushing back and will continue to push back. Remember, Trump can do what he can do by executive order. Some of that Democrats are protesting about. Some of it's going to be challenged in the courts. He has a mandate in his view. And again, the people voted for him. He won all seven battleground states to do those sorts of things. But when Trump tries to get things done by legislation, Democrats are going to push back and they're going to push back hard. There's no doubt about that. But this really is a matter of picking their battles and fighting those most effectively against Donald Trump and his radical agenda.
So why then would Democrats give Marco Rubio such a resounding vote to make him Secretary of State?
Well, if you look at Marco Rubio's politics over many years, I mean, he is what passes, I suppose, for mainstream conservative Republican. Yes, he has moved in Trump's directions on certain things, in particular the Ukraine war. By and large, he is now a mainstream Republican, and Democrats would probably see him as hopefully a voice for sanity within the Trump
Larry, district. That is delusional. All of these picks will echo their master's voice, and you know that. Little Marco will not stand up to Big Don.
Pat, you know, look, there's a big distinction to be made between Marco Rubio and the likes of Pete Hegseth or Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There's a big distinction to be drawn between them. And yes, Democrats don't have to agree with Marco Rubio, and they do disagree with him on lots of things. But if you look at it in the round, despite his drift towards Trump, despite the Republican Party's drift towards Trump, opposing Marco Rubio for the sake of opposing him doesn't make much sense to me politically or otherwise, especially in a context in which, you know, let's take everything you say as true. Marco Rubio still represents something of the Democrats' best hope for a voice in the wilderness within the Trump administration.
So you believe that Marco will stand up to Donald Trump? I mean, we saw when he was branded Little Marco, humiliated by Donald Trump in the 2016 campaign, that Little Marco wasn't there.
you know, look, standing up to Trump in a context where he wields considerable authority, where the Republican Party is in his corner completely, standing up to him, you know, maybe that's going to be quite difficult. But let me put to you an alternative scenario, Pat. Democrats, in some respects, being Secretary of State is a big job. We've seen Anthony Blinken, how big of a job it was for him in the Biden administration. It is a big job. Let's look at an alternative scenario. Let's say, for instance, Democrats, you know, had offered some resistance, et cetera. There's every chance that Donald Trump could have got somebody over the line as Secretary of State who, from their point of view, from the world's point of view, is an infinitely worse choice than Marco Rubio. So again, it's a case of fighting the battles that won. And again, recognizing the fact that the people have spoken, respecting in a way that the Trump and the Republicans did not, respecting the will of the people. And again, fighting the battles that can be won.
So Marco Rubio, then the calculation is he's the least worst.
Yeah, effectively. Effectively, I think that is probably the calculation in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I suppose something of a hope that he might rediscover some of the principles that animated him earlier on in his political career. There's not one person, you know, that Donald Trump is going to nominate who is going to be okay or au fait with Democrats. But again, it's a case of we are where we are. We mightn't like where we are, but we are where we are. And all things considered, Marco Rubio is the least objectionable of the people who Donald Trump has put forward.
But didn't he fail his first test yesterday when he decided, or he was told by Donald Trump, that he would become the de facto head of USAID, which Musk had decided to abolish? He locked the doors on the workers yesterday. And then Marco Rubio announces that he is the de facto head of USAID, the Agency of International Development, and he would appoint someone, or had appointed someone, who was nameless, who'd actually be running the show. But Marco was in charge. Now, doesn't that tell you something about what kind of character Marco actually has?
Well, let's see how this plays out, Pat. Donald Trump himself, you know, despite, you know, going along with Elon Musk, has said that he likes the concept of USAID. I think it is, you know, along the lines of some of the DEI agenda, as he would see it, that he's pulled out of that. We'll see what Marco Rubio does, or whoever he is appointed actually does, when it comes to administering the very important aid, including to this country, that USAID provides. We'll see. The door is not closed altogether on that yet. Obviously, some worrying scenes yesterday, which Democrats were absolutely right to push back against. But, you know, again, Pat, Trump won the election. I don't know what else I can say to you. Trump won the election. And as a result, as president of the United States, he has certain powers. He has a certain mandate to do things. And whether we like that or not, that is the reality of the situation. And fighting every single thing he does, when some of these fights are unwinnable and they all could prove to be politically counterproductive, Democrats just aren't in a position to do so. And it comes at a time when they very desperately need to rebuild, to reframe their message, to reframe how they're going to stand for office, so as to prevent somebody of the ilk of Donald Trump, somebody who's bloody-minded as Donald Trump, from winning the presidency again. And they don't have much time with the midterms coming up very quickly.
So who is the leader of the Democrats? You know, Nancy Pelosi might have been perceived to be such when she was House Speaker. Obviously, Kamala Harris, a dead duck after the election. So who is the de facto leader of the Democrats? Joe Biden's retired. I mean, where is the voice that speaks for the Democrats?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. Right now, you would struggle to point out a singular de facto leader of the Democratic Party. I do think that the House Majority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, is a strong figure in his own right. I think he's going to emerge as the leader of the opposition on Capitol Hill. I have to say that Chuck Schumer, the leader in the Senate, in my view, is past his sell-by date. I think he sends a lot of the wrong signals as, again, an elderly leader of the party. I think it is important to make room for a next generation. But let's look at some of the deep talent that Democrats do have. You have people like Gretchen Whitmer. You have people like Gavin Newsom, despite having been wounded by what happened in California. You have people like the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, and a very strong young African-American man. You have moderates like Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky. You have Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania. You have Pete Buttigieg, who's looking at running for the United States Senate in Michigan. You have a host of really strong, really good potential presidential candidates and leaders. It is from that cadre of people that Democrats will pick the next de facto leader of their party.
And what is the message that they have? I mean, make America great again is a very good catchphrase, trying to insist that not alone is America still great, but it is still the most powerful economy and has the most powerful military in the world. So whatever Trump is going to do to enhance that, the Democrats need some sort of battle cry, some kind of clear message that the electorate can grasp.
It's very, in my view, Pat, despite all the complications, despite the failure to implement this, I think a lot of it because of the role of the almighty dollar in U.S. politics, the message is actually pretty straightforward for the Democrats. It is to get back to basics and to cut through the bluster and the guff of Make America Great Again and say to the American people, Donald Trump is promising you X, Y, and Z. When, and I don't say if, but when he fails to deliver on things like, reduced prescription costs, reductions in the cost of living, a better way of life for Americans who live paycheck to paycheck, expanded access to health care, cutting the cost of higher education, all of those things. When Donald Trump fails to deliver on them, they need to say, this is our comprehensive plan to do that. And we're going to put our shoulder to the wheel and deliver on these things for you, because that's historically what our party has always been about. If they put their shoulder to the wheel on that front, and they push the leftist cultural agenda to the side, not to abandon it, but not to lead with it, not to think that they can win elections on abortion or whatever other social issues there are, but to lead on the bread and butter, that is the way forward for the Democratic Party. My own fear, speaking as a Democrat, is that they won't be able to do that because of the powered money of special interests who, on the one hand, want a more corporatist agenda on economics, and number two, are wedded to an extreme left progressive agenda on cultural issues. That's my fear. But if they were to do those two things simultaneously, in my view, the Democratic Party becomes a 50-state political party and potentially an electoral juggernaut.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.